This is the Popmatic Podcast for September 30th, 2015. Banned Books Week! Podcast where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are
Amanda,
Bill,
Beep,
Jeremy.
I'm Mike, and I'm with the band.
As you can hear from the echo, we're recording from the observation towers of Public Square Park.
Oh.
There is Wi-Fi, so it's spotty, so we should hurry.
Is that what those are called?
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
See, yes. We learned something today.
Yeah. I've never been up there.
Nope.
We will be recording in impromptu locations around downtown Nashville where the children's department of the main library is being remodeled. It's appropriate we're in front of the Metro Courthouse because this week is Banned Books Week! Every year, libraries, publishers, bookstores, and most importantly, readers, that's you, listeners.
That's me. I read.
Celebrate the freedom to read.
I read.
Banned Books Week highlights the problem of censorship. On a positive note, it's a chance to exercise our intellectual freedom. Go to your library and read a book. You can do that in the United States, and that is awesome.
Yeah.
So in this episode, we will tell you about our favorite banned books and or other censored stuff. Get uncensored. No, wait, never mind.
Not with this crowd.
I take it back.
Beep, 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 beep.
The skin that I was... forget. No anecdotes. Censored!
All right, good.
Look at that.
That's the first time you've self-censored.
You are going to go first.
Make good choices, Jeremy.
Jeremy's going to go first.
Is it my turn?
Do it.
Are you ready for me?
Cold open.
Cold open.
So you're a self-starter.
I'm a self-censor-er.
Beep, beep.
All right. I am no great pornographer, but I occasionally...
You meaning you're a bad one?
Wait, you're a pornographer?
I am no great pornographer.
I forgot about this job description you have.
Larry Flint is also from Kentucky?
I know he got shot in the
I would have guessed
hometown.
That.
Somehow I guessed, right?
Wow, connections!
Connection, cool.
Yeah. So, I am no great pornographer like Larry Flint. He's also a First Amendment advocate. But I occasionally check out books with nudity and graphic violence and any number of other images which are not appropriate for my young son. I used to leave these books just sitting out on my desk, and he would only pay attention to them long enough to try to put them in his mouth. But now he's 5 years old, and he's curious about every book in our house. But he's my kid... not your kid, and it's up to me to decide what's appropriate for him, or more accurately, it's up to my wife to tell me, because when I was his age, I'd probably already seen and heard way too much, man. Because my parents are like, whatever, go get me some cigarettes. Don't buy soda in cans. So even though I had, children to raise me, I still know enough not to leave an adult comic like Sex Criminals sitting out next to an all-ages comic like Lumberjanes. So there are some folks out there who may be listening who might be shocked or concerned that the library would even have a book with a title like Sex Criminals, and it's a comic book about a story. It's a story about a couple whose romance allows them to stop time and rob banks.
Romance, quote unquote.
Yeah, I didn't put the quotes in there, but let's say romance.
Yeah, let's
censor ourselves here.
When a boy and a girl love each other very much.
Yes, they share a special hug. So if you're one of those people who might be offended about that kind of thing, let me tell you about the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. It's a nonprofit founded in 1986, and it got its start by raising funds to help pay the legal expenses of an Illinois comic book store owner who was charged with the possession and sale of obscene material like the erotic funny animal comic Omaha the Cat Dancer. That is not available at your public library, but check...
check
ILL.
Yeah, check local cons.
Yeah. Now, the CBLDF is, quote, dedicated to the protection of the First Amendment rights of the comics art form and its community of retailers, creators, publishers, librarians, and readers. The CBLDF provides legal referrals, representation, advice, assistance, and education in the furtherance of these goals. Their site, on their site, which we will include a link in the notes, their site lists a number of banned and challenged books. We will also include those in the notes. And many of those are available here at your public library. There are some expected titles on here, like The Dark Knight Strikes Again and Watchmen. But there are also some surprises, like the all-ages classic Bone by Jeff Smith. This is a series about a group of cousins who are cast out of their hometown, and they go off into a mysterious valley where they're caught up in a quest to free the citizens from an evil force. Bone has been challenged many times, primarily because the characters are depicted smoking and drinking, and the book is typically found in elementary school and juvenile library collections. Bone was number 10 on the 2013 ALA list of frequently challenged books, but its spot was taken in 2014 by Raina Telgemeier's drama. Drama is the story of a middle school drama troupe and was deemed sexually explicit because two gay male characters share an onstage kiss. And that's sort of like calling Star Trek a documentary about space travel, maybe? Or something else that's...
Wait, it's not?
Yeah, exactly.
Wait a minute.
Hold on.
I go with the aliens from...
Spoiler alert.
Whatever that movie.
Galaxy Quest? I don't know why. So if you think that's ridiculous... then consider Maurice Sendak's In the Night Kitchen. You can argue about whether or not it's a comic or not, why not, sure it is. But is it obscene? There's a naked boy in the book, and over the years, some librarians have painted a diaper over the boy's private parts. But to me, a boy several years out of diapers wearing a diaper is much more disturbing than a nude boy. But what could be worse than defacing a book? Some folks have even been known to burn them. And maybe these folks haven't seen Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, but let me tell you, that's based on true events.
So you should try reading books instead of burning them.
Now do freedom a favor and check out one of these books today. Amanda?
Yeah, Bone is great. Sex Criminals is great.
The book burning episode of The Waltons is my favorite episode.
Why does The Waltons keep appearing?
They were burning the Bible.
They were gonna burn a German version of the Bible.
Why? Yeah. I mean, Voss.
I think it was. It must have been set during World War II. It's ironic too because in World War I, librarians had no problem censoring or removing German books from public libraries. Oh, what a sea change to now! I'm sorry, Amanda. Do you have something interesting to tell us about?
Do you have something non-German to talk about on our non-German podcast? Let's stop throwing the Germans under the bus.
Let's wait till Oktoberfest. Yeah.
Let's stop throwing the Germans under the VW bus.
When most people consider banned books, I have a feeling that they think more about what Brian calls literature as opposed to just, you know, generic books. Once in a while, you know, sure, Captain Underpants will sneak in. But mostly, when I think about them, I think about, like, To Kill a Mockingbird or Lolita or Catcher in the Rye. But in 2012, a little book called TTYL topped the ALA's banned book list. It's written by Lauren Miracle. That's with a Y, M-Y-R-A-C-L-E, which she claims is her real name, by the way.
Wink, wink with the Y.
So this is a young adult book which follows three girls who are best friends as they navigate through the bumpy world of high school, and it's actually the first book in a series of four books called The Internet Girls. So the characters, Angela is the boy crazy flirt, Maddie is the wild girl, and Zoe is the brainy good girl. Guess which one I was?
Wild girl.
The flirt?
I was the brainy good girl.
I don't know you at all.
Instead of normal prose style, this book is written as if we are reading the girls' instant message boards. In the first book, by the end of the series, like the rest of the world, the author evolved or devolved, whatever you want to argue, from instant messaging into texting. And this was actually the first book of its kind when it came out in 2004. Okay, group participation. TTYL stands for...
Talk to you later.
Which was followed by TTFN.
Talk to you now.
Then, I'm just going to say this one because it's stupid if I spell it out. Later Gator. And then the last one is YOLO.
You only live once.
You only live once. See, yeah.
Carpe diem.
Lilas.
Carpe diem.
I am just some out of touch.
Like, you'll stop listening to
it. I had to look up TTFN like years ago because I'm like, what does this mean?
That was the one I knew. I knew TTFN. I didn't know YOLO.
Like Yogi Berra once said, the future ain't what it used to be.
So initially these books were banned because they contained a very honest dialogue about teenage girl sexuality, in addition to other teenage girl angst. Just like girls would do if they were talking to their best friends without parental supervision, which, you know, naturally makes parents not like these books.
Anarchy! I don't know what it is, but I love it.
To compound that, most adults don't really, finger quotes, get the texting style of the books. So not only are their kids reading about sex, but they're doing it in an anti-parent way that apparently these parents assumed was making their kids dumber and sluttier.
They probably think this stands for something really...
Yeah, really horrible. Yeah.
Meanwhile, I use correct grammar, and my mom uses like the worst like texting speed. Call me.
I heard my daughter was into TTYL. Oh my god.
He'll kill her. You gotta watch that.
Better than that.
It's a cult.
So personally, if I had a teenage daughter, I'd let her read these books, and then we'd talk about them. I thought the stories were really good, and even I'm not a big instant messenger / texter, but I still knew exactly what they were saying. And you know what? It's hard being a teenage girl, and I think these books would be an excellent platform to open up a dialogue between parents and their kids. Now, I was a little worried that the books would be a little bit too, finger quotes, high school-y for me to enjoy. Like, oh my gosh, IDK. Or like, what's your damage, Heather? Okay, well, a little old school on that last.
Whoa. It's coming back. Yeah, it's coming back.
Okay.
And there was a little bit of that, but it didn't really detract from the story. My high school friends and I probably would have been just like the winsome threesome in this book if, you know, we'd have had cell phones. Hashtag starting to feel old.
Insisted those giant bricks.
Yeah, so anyway, these are good. If you have teenagers or no teenagers, definitely check them out. Also, like we always like to mention, the more people want to ban these books, the more the rest of us want to read them.
Yeah.
Just saying. LOL.
That's right.
Smiley face.
I can remember, I couldn't figure out people were writing out when they were burping, and they were writing, be right back.
Nice.
Anyway, wow.
I drove by a church one time during Easter, and it said, like, Ogre Merc, and I was like, is that some biblical demon I don't know about? That's amazing. And then like I kept seeing it. I thought, what is this? And so I sat down and like I Googled it, and then like I don't know if I talked to like my church friends or whatever, and finally figured it out. It was like a text thing. It was like, oh God, you are my God.
I was like, I wouldn't have known Ogre Merc either.
Yeah. Wow. It was like OGURMG. Ogre Merc. I think
it took me for finally. I just looked up what SMH meant. It's like smack my head. Really? Yeah. People say that.
Some of them I can figure out because I got a thing with acronyms.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So you're my text guy. Yeah, if I need to translate. Yeah, yeah.
I used to work Advanced Idea Mechanics.
I'm learning on this podcast because I thought SMH just meant like schmeh, like schmeh.
Schmeh.
The guy's scoffing your name.
ROFL, Brian, ROFL.
You can see it.
LOL, OL, OL.
LMAO, LMAO.
That makes more sense than smack my head, though. I mean, I said smeh more than I said smack my
head. I would use smeh in a sentence before I would say smack my head.
Most people don't smack their head. Like, I mean, I guess I do sometimes.
I mean,
but,
you know, I just look at the meme that Picard does.
Just while he's editing the podcast.
Bill.
Well, I'm going old school, of course, and I want to talk about the novel Johnny Got His Gun by Dalton Trumbo, which was published in 1938 and won the National Book Award for Most Original Novel. Johnny Got His Gun is written in a disjointed stream of consciousness style. It deals with Joe Bonham, an American soldier serving in World War I, who's been hit by an artillery shell that blows off his arms, legs, blinds the character. He also lost his tongue, his hearing, his teeth. The entire book is told from Joe Bonham's perspective. It flashes back to his own life, reality, and fantasy. This is an anti-war drama. I'm sure the book has been banned because the writer, Dalton Trumbo, who was banned from writing screenplays. Dalton Trumbo was at one time the highest paid screenwriter in Hollywood, and in 1947 he was blacklisted. He was also served a 11-month prison sentence because he refused to testify before the House of Un-American Activities Committee about his alleged communist affiliation. There's a great documentary about Dalton Trumbo, and it's simply called Trumbo.
Do you state your full name?
Dalton Trumbo.
He was Hollywood's greatest screenwriter.
I'm Spartacus! I'm Spartacus!
He was one of our heroes. He was an iconoclast.
His words still resonate today.
I dreamed that the world could be better and tried to make it so.
The right man collides with the right idea at precisely the right time.
I find enough to do, but don't enjoy doing it.
I must make the choice of what kind of writer I want to be.
Dalton Trumbo, prisoner number 7551.
Mr. Trumbo, are you now, have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
He defied a committee.
I believe I have the right to be confronted with any evidence.
You're not asking the question.
I was.
It was a matter of total disaster.
He defied the system.
During the 40s, the situation in Hollywood is unless you cooperate with the committee, you won't be employed.
My father loved it when he could be in some kind of magnificent battle with somebody.
They took his honor.
He wasn't not looking for trouble. It seemed to come to him.
They took his freedom.
I was judged guilty of contempt. It was a completely just verdict. I had contempt for that Congress.
So Dalton Trumbo went to war.
He began writing under assumed name.
I think of myself as an extremely peaceable man.
Such a man, Dalton Trumbo was not.
But the ending.
Brave One received the Academy Award for Best Original Story.
Could only be written by him.
That became the only unclaimed Oscar in the history of the Academy Awards.
We are the hub of the wheel and the spokes and the wheel itself.
I, dedicated fool, lay swooning in my bed with no companion.
Say hello to my friends and piss on my enemies.
Trumbo is this person with an unbelievably strong sense of justice.
Dalton was a contrarian. He had fights. Just glad he never had a fight with me.
Irritably yours, Dalton Trumbo.
We also have in our collection Spartacus and Exodus, which Dalton Trumbo wrote. Those two films came out in 1960, and they broke the blacklist, and Dalton Trumbo could work under his name again, his own name again. And it's also interesting, during that time he was blacklisted, he wrote a lot of movies under other names he had. They called them fronts. He even won an Oscar for The Brave Bull under Robert Rich, but he couldn't receive it. It was one of those little known secrets that he had wrote in that screenplay, but he couldn't take credit for it. He also wrote Roman Holiday and Gun Crazy. We have both those movies in our collection. Also coming out this November is Trumbo, a feature movie featuring, starring Bryan Cranston as Dalton Trumbo. So read Johnny Got His Gun, watch the Trumbo documentary, don't forget Spartacus and Exodus, and I'm going to throw in Lonely Are the Brave, a personal favorite of mine, starring Kirk Douglas, which Mr. Trumbo also wrote. So Mike.
All right.
That reminds me of that Aerosmith song. Janie got a gun.
Oh. Janie got a gun. That's the
essence. That's what I was thinking the whole time.
I believe Metallica song one. I believe uses clips from the movie version of.
I can remember anything. Do, 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 do.
Darkness imprisoning me. All that I see, absolute horror.
Since I was invited to do this show, I've discovered so much about my own tastes in books, movies, and TV, as I cover my heart again, because everybody laughs at that. I kind of always assumed that my tastes were pretty broad, but, you know, I've learned since doing this that there's a certain pattern to things I really, really like.
Welcome to the sunlight, troll!
Yeah. Who knew? Like, for example, today I'm going to recommend Lord of the Flies by William Golding, the only assigned book that I enjoyed reading in high school.
Is it bad I never read it? Does that make me a bad person?
I've never read it either.
Okay, good.
Oh, you guys, you know.
I've only read To Kill a Mockingbird or Great Gatsby.
Library Card Revoked.
I lost one a long time ago.
You know that one book about the fall of society, child murder? It's vaguely science fiction-y. Contains no romantic subplots at all. That's super depressing and dark and violent and has really heavy symbolism. You know, a mic book.
I think we found out why I didn't read it. Yeah,
exactly. You would not like this book.
No, I like all that stuff that's not there.
Yeah. The book begins much like Lost. A plane crashes in a remote island in the South Pacific, and much like Lost, you know, it only focuses on a couple of kids who survived a plane crash, and although there's presumably like a couple dozen who
now, throughout the book are people complaining because you don't get to know the people that are in the background, and then, like when you get to know the people in the background.
Hey, but when you do, it's Paolo and Francesca, and then you're or whatever, and then you're stuck with. Oh wait, no, that's from Dante. Never mind.
Nikki and Paolo.
Nikki and Paolo.
That's
it.
That's who I was thinking of too.
Yeah, it's Paolo and Francesca or the Circle of Lust and the Inferno. Snobcorn.
Pardon me, would you have any Grey Poupon?
Play it on yourself.
No one, play it for me. High five, me. All right. No one is searching for the boys, because, only kids survived the crash. No one is searching that because there is some sort of vague nuclear war going on elsewhere in the world. That plot point is actually left pretty unclear. I guess because most school children don't really like keeping up with the news. what's going on? They quickly elect a leader named Ralph, who's like one of those kind of like leaders who tries to be nice to everybody, but doesn't really work out well. He uses a conch shell to call the other boys to order. The other boys who are like the main characters of the book include Piggy, an overweight boy whom nobody likes, but has a thick pair of spectacles that they use to make fire, so he's very valuable. Jack, a violent boy who forms his own group of sadistic bad boys. Roger, Jack's chief henchman, and is the scariest figure in the book. Even when the devil shows up, he's not as scary as Roger. And Simon, a Christ metaphor. Things go well for a little while until some of the smaller children mention seeing a beast in the jungles near the beach.
Is it a polar bear?
Is it a cloud of black smoke?
You can see that they're...
Is it Jeff Probst?
No, it's that actor from that show. Jack forms a hunting party. Whoever the main character of the show Bosch on Amazon. Jack forms a hunting party that goes to the woods in search of the beast. Eventually they kill a mama boar and mount its head on a stick to appease the beast. Simon, who is a dreamy child who wanders the jungles in search of, adventures, I guess, stumbles upon the head and has a creepy conversation with it, like this weird like fever dream while you're like chatting with the severed head that has like flies flying around inside its mouth and eating its eyes and all that, and giving the book its title, for by then the head is swarming with flies. Simon, who is creeped out, runs away and finds out that the beast, which all the kids are scared about, is actually the corpse of an Air Force pilot whose parachute didn't correctly deploy. Hooray! So he goes to tell the group, who weren't expecting him, think he's the beast, and tear him apart. Things don't go too well for all the kids after that. I won't go into details, but wow, whew, dark stuff. I read some years ago that one of the reasons why Golding wrote the book was because everybody views like childhood as this idyllic time filled with innocence. But he was a school teacher and found out what kids are really like. They're like little adults who are just ignorant.
This is based on Tuesday at the playground.
Yeah. Sure. When they have less impulse control.
Yes.
Which I have none.
You gained a little bit. You haven't set us on fire yet.
Good job.
You also stopped yourself from bursting into an anecdote at the beginning of the show.
You did. So.
Yeah. Progress. You didn't go into details about how you're a pornographer, although they'll be off pod. I'm curious about that. Maybe you
have
the band.
Website. I don't have a website.
Beardfan.com.
I have a lot of websites. None of them are pornographic.
Scandal. Lord of the Flies is number 8 on the ALA, the American Library Association's list of frequently banned classics. It has been challenged for the violence, of course, but it's also been challenged for language and perceived anti-religious overtones. I think it's great. Everybody should read it except for Amanda.
Get out of jail free card.
Yeah, no.
I've got to spend some time and like work on the holes in my why haven't you read this list? because I like there's so many that I just because I like in school we I think we probably had to read it too, and I was like, I'm not reading that. I'm gonna read Goldfinger.
Yeah, instead, you know, I like that. Instead, I read like you know. Yeah, I'd rather read Goldfinger.
I was reading,
you know, a pretty cool 70s sci-fi at the time. I'd rather read The Boat in God's Eye.
I didn't read that either.
I read Lord of the Flies in school. I don't remember it at all, but judging from Mike's description, I was like, you're talking about some book that I would talk about? Yeah. I was like, I want to read it again.
Yeah, you should.
I did read The Sign of the Beaver. That was a good one.
That was all horrible.
We had to make my friend and I made a diorama, end of anecdote.
We did too. We had to draw pictures.
We got Lincoln logs.
For like 2 months. I'm like, seriously, it's a 100-page book.
Repressed joke. The 2011 edition of Lord of the Flies is an introduction by Stephen King, who's really the patron saint of this book.
I've never read a book by Stephen King. Okay, Snopcard.
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
Since banned books...
You're a creep show. You've got a pass for life.
This is
since...
Gary from Perth. Other callbacks. As for you.
When since, I was a child.
Since banned books week
this is... how my forthcoming memory.
Jerry just snarfed. Since banned books week is kind of like spring break for me, I'm going to talk about two things today. Just totally overindulge. First, Bless Me, Ultima. This is a frequently banned book. And I always wanted to read it, but I never did. But since we're right in the middle of Hispanic Heritage Month, and we have this Estamos Aquí programming thing going on all year, it's like forced me to read it. Since it's written by Rodolfo Anaya, it's about a 6-year-old boy named Antonio growing up in New Mexico in the 1940s. And then all the cultural tensions that shape him. It's called New Mexico because it used to be Mexico. Culturally, his family is Mexican. They speak Spanish. They're like all the things that we think about Mexican culture, that's his family, even though they're in the United States at the time and it's New Mexico. Now, his mother's family are farmers, but his father's family are vaqueros or cowboys, and they create these cultural tensions. And yes, John Wayne, cowboys are Mexican. They're vaqueros first before they were cowboys. But then the other big tension is Christianity versus like paganism or indigenous religion. Ultima, like the local healer, is aging. And because Antonio's father is this ex-cowboy that used to live out on the plains, he invites Ultima to come and live with their family so she doesn't have to live by herself out on the plains alone. And she's a curandera, which is a traditional healer. So then there's this tension within the community and the family about the fact that they have this traditional healer living with them, even though they're a Catholic family. So you guys know that I hate books, especially novels, but I will say that this book was fantastic.
I know you don't finish them.
This book was fantastic. I rode the bus today so I could finish this book. That's how good it was. Ultimately, you know, whenever she comes to live with the family, she brings her owl that's her familiar, and I was like, boom, done, you win, I love it. But one of the things that the book...
It's like Harry Potter.
But you've never
Ryan.
Read Harry Potter?
No, of course
not. Right. I will join you in that snob card.
Yeah. Ooh, can we share this snob card?
What this book actually captured very well is so the magic that, you know, a country landscape can have on a child. I'm a country boy. Whose house? Farmhouse! And you know,
that's Jeremy's childhood.
Joke is awesome.
Like, that's
it.
My legacy on the podcast. Ryan said, whose house? Farmhouse.
And Anaya just nails it. He just captures it perfectly how, you know, the way that, you know, a landscape can affect a child's mind. So also, Ultima is the name of a very popular fantasy video game franchise.
Yes, I was going to bring that up because Ultima is a huge deal in video game land.
That librarians of a certain age cannot see this book and think, bless me, Ultima, and think, yes.
I'll play as Avatar, it'll be great.
Yeah, I know. So it's kind of amazing.
You guys are great.
So what's...
You're glad that there's some nerd topic that you can't join.
That's right. I'll be over here being cool.
So why is this book banned? What's the problem with this book? Well, the problem that some people have with the book is that like Ultima's paganism is treated with as much respect or legitimacy, you know, as the Christianity in the book. And some people, you know, don't like that. And that's pretty much the deal with that. Like, and you know what's funny is like I really did like the book. It really touched me in a personal way. But, you know, if it has a sort of a flaw, it's that these tensions between the farmers and the cowboys and the Christians and the pagans Dickens. They're set up right in the first 50 pages, and then the book goes on for 250 pages, and it's not resolved. And the whole idea is that...
Just like real life.
Just like real life. And, you know, the idea is that, you know, you become all these influences, you know, make you the person that you are. But one of the things I couldn't help to think about was another book that's frequently challenged is the book by Judy Salinger that's very famous, The Catcher in the Rye.
Catcher in the Rye, yeah.
And I've just like realized how like boring and crappy and tedious and meaningless that book is compared to this awesome book. Bless
Ooh,
me all.
Wow.
Okay.
It's like a double snuff card. Yeah. So,
I guess that's a bring you down card for its many fans.
I will say that, well, you know, you know what that is? I think that there's the suburban kid experience and there's the country boy kid experience. And I'm a country boy, yeah. And there you go. I think that pretty much... There also, I think, is the literary snob factor thing happening. Mm-hmm. So, like, I do think that by certain standards that were created and judged by literary snobs, The Catcher in the Rye probably fits the mold of what a good, well-structured novel should be. Uh-huh. And Bless Me, Ultima absolutely does not. And that's kind of what my one criticism about before was earlier. But
also,
you know what?
Salinger also is white and also mysterious.
Also, snobs. Okay. So, I like Bless Me Ultima better.
I can't tell, really.
Pretty vague. I can't wait to talk to him after the podcast.
Death like, to Salinger.
I didn't finish it, it kind of sucked.
When J.D. Salinger died, Brian put up a display of, like, rest in peace, J.D. Salinger, and he put a picture of him up, and there was, like, three pictures of him out there, and the picture that he put up is J.D. Salinger, like, coming at the lens of the camera, like his angry face, and it said, like, R.I.P.
Awesome. I would have done it as, oh, wait, that's Tim's Pinchon, where, like, on the Simpsons, where
he
had, like,
the bag
over
on his head. That's good stuff.
Right, so that's all just kid stuff, though. Like people wanting to ban books or not, you know, wanting the libraries to get rid of books because there are opinions in them that they don't like. But sometimes, you know, books have far greater implications that are way more serious. And one of those books is The Wretched of the Earth by Frantz Fanon. It's an analysis of the psychological effects of being colonized. And for instance, like another country comes into your country and like takes it over. The psychological effects of that. He concludes that the psychological effects are bad.
Right? This is not a good thing.
You know. Wow.
Being subjugated by white people
is pretty cool, right?
And the way to fix that is to violently overthrow the colonizers.
Oh.
Okay?
So the book was banned in France when it came out in 1961. You can Google what was happening then and why they would think that should be banned. Now, okay.
Spoiler alert, Algeria? Yeah, Algeria.
The Battle of Algiers.
We're talking about. I've never read this book.
Excellent.
The truth comes to light.
I'm feeling so light.
I'm not allowed to.
I'm bathing in awesomeness right now.
I've never read this book, but I did recently see a movie inspired by this book. That I think directly.
I could have recommended Lost and said that because.
Cheating.
No. This movie is directly inspired by this book. Okay.
Sure.
So it's called Concerning Violence, 9 Scenes from the Anti-Imperialistic Self-Defense. So it's a documentary that's structured around quotes from The Wretched of the Earth. Oh. So there are 9 quotes and 9 chapters in the film. So there's a quote, a chapter about like why you should violently overthrow your oppressors. And then there's footage of actual colonial war zones and interviews of the people who were fighting against the colonizers. There's a lot of scenes from Africa, Zimbabwe, Algeria. And the footage was shot by Swedish TV crews in the 1960s and 1970s. Fanon actually himself fought for Algerian independence. And hearing people speak about being willing to commit violence for political change really puts Banned Books Week in a whole different context. It's very immediate and real and intense and makes the sort of little school board battles that we have about books seem very trivial. The film was made by Göran Olsson. He's a Swedish filmmaker. I guess that's probably why he had access to all this old Swedish TV footage. A few years back, he made a film called Black Power Mixtape. It was basically the same deal. It was the same thing. Like, it was interviews with people involved in the Black Power movement in the United States in the 1970s, and all the footage was vintage from the 70s from Swedish TV crews. Because this is a pop culture podcast, I'd like to point out that Concerning Violence, nine scenes from the anti-imperialistic self-defense was narrated by Lauren Hill. All right. Happy Banned Books Week. What do we do on Tickle My Fancy? Get pumped for Banned Books Week! What else do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Amanda.
My birthday's tickling my fancy.
Happy birthday!
Today is your birthday. That's all I know.
Yeah. That's my favorite
I'd sing happy birthday, we get sued. And
no, it's in public domain now.
Well, supposedly.
Is it Korean? Librarians to the rescue.
Oh.
Yeah. Hey, this is a fair use podcast. We're all good.
That's right.
Okay, so today I want to talk to you about my favorite new cooking show. Ooh. Actually, it's a baking show, and it's British, so naturally it's called The Great British Baking Show. Catchy.
Ooh.
It's catchy.
But are there measurements in like metric units though?
Well, they've done, they've done both metric and cups. So a couple of months ago, my friend and I were kind of flipping around the channels, and we came across this great little marathon of a baking show on PBS. And it's set in a big white tent out in the middle of an idyllic English field, and it's probably connected to some great English manor house that we never get to see. But inside the tent are 10 baking stations with beautiful pastel-colored KitchenAid mixers and cute little stoves with doors that kind of slide under the unit that I totally covet and want to put in my house. So we watched a few episodes, and my favorite was the pie episode, which their last challenge, they made tiered pies, which I have never, like, you
what?
Have, like, wedding cakes, but,
yeah.
like, in pie.
Oh.
That was my...
Do tell. Yeah, so, we need pictures of this on the
very,
show notes.
Very, very British. Meat pie is very British.
Oh, man,
so, anyway, mind. Then it got late, and so it was, like, midnight. We couldn't finish watching it, we could never find the rest of these episodes. So, we went to PBS's website and found that we weren't alone. Everybody was like, oh, bring the show back. Who's going to win? We didn't get to see, because they only had it on just that one time, I guess. So, we'll never know who the winner of the first season was, sad-faced. But recently, we were flipping through my on-demand menu, and lo and behold, there was The Great British Baking Show. It was back!
Oh, but it wasn't crikey!
It wasn't the first season. It's a whole new second season, and we found it at the beginning.
Brilliant.
So,
nice.
And what I like most about this show is that it features 10 amateur English bakers, so they're not professionals, and they come together on the weekends for 3 challenges. So they have 2 tests on Saturday, and then 1 big one on Sunday. And the first week they did cakes, the second week they did bread. The worst baker gets kicked off, and then they announce the topic for the next week. And the cool part is, these 10 bakers, they go home, and they can practice all week on getting their recipes ready, and then they come back for the next weekend to do their topic. And they use recipes. Like, you can see them, and they're sitting on their crown, they're using a recipe. And I want to be on the show so bad, because I could totally do this.
Question.
Yes, Mike.
So, they know in advance what next week's topic is?
They say, like, next week we're going to do desserts. And so they go home and they pick the recipe they want to do and they practice it and then they come back and they make it.
Ooh, other question?
Yes.
So is this like Chopped or Iron Chef where, like, they have to make it with a certain ingredient? Or is it just like you're making cakes?
Well, they say some, like, there's usually the first challenge is called your best cake. Like, you make your best cake. Then the second challenge is they give you a recipe and say you have to make this, like, everybody makes the same recipe.
Uh-huh.
And then the Sunday challenge is the showstopper where you do, like, this big over the top thing, and you get to pick again.
Okay.
So you just have to stay within the guidelines they give you.
Alright,
carry on. So I really want to be on the show so bad because I could totally do this, except that I make American things and I don't really grasp the British baking aesthetic.
A tiered meat pie.
Yeah, they're like, who really likes meat pies? I'm like, come on, people.
Do they actually have meat in them, though? I thought
yes,
that was just
no, it's okay. Like they're like okay. meat
I think
pies.
And don't ask what blood pudding is.
Oh, I know what blood pudding is.
We I think we call it a pot pie.
Okay. But mince meat is not actual meat.
No, mincemeat is like figs
like
and dates.
Is it like cheese or something?
Or? No, it's the nuts and fruit.
It's nuts and fruit and... It's kind of like
cinnamon
fruitcake, but in pie form.
Yeah.
So anyway, this upcoming week is dessert. I can't wait to see it. Plus, one of the bakers in this season looks like Mr. Bean, aged 20 years. So, he's not my favorite, though.
Bruno Agatha.
Yeah. Okay, go.
It's a bean pie.
Butter, y'all.
Tickling My Fancy is from Beyond the Grave.
Ooh.
Which is going to be showing at our Movies at Maine on Saturday, October 3rd, 2015 at 2 p.m. If you go antiquing at Temptations Limited, you may get more than you bargained for. Peter Cushing stars as a vengeful shop owner in From Beyond the Grave, a delightfully creepy horror film featuring four terrible tales. Also, we have a Legends of Film podcast with the film's director, Kevin Connor. So, once again, From Beyond the Grave, Saturday, October 3rd, 2015, 2 p.m. at the Nashville Public Library, 615 Church Street, downtown in the auditorium. Jeremy,
I want to clarify just a second. The film is called From Beyond the Grave. Like, Bill didn't just die and is, like, coming to us from there. Because it sounded like you started From Beyond the Grave, and I was like, oh, wait, that's the title. Just a clarification.
That reminds me of the, I guess it probably predates it. Do you ever see the Friday the 13th TV show that had nothing to do with Friday the 13th?
Unfortunately, yes.
I like that. I watched a couple of those. They're cheesy.
Yeah, it's like an ironic enjoyment.
The redheaded woman who plays
Roby.
Roby. She's got one name and it's Roby.
Hello.
More like this Roby.
For your porn website.
There you go. That's my website. This
Roby.co.uk.
/
It's kind of funny that they show was over there, like just disappeared.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that was weird.
Wendy Roby was the red-haired, one-eyed woman in Twin Peaks.
Oh.
Was the actress's name.
Yeah.
Isn't Sherry Belafonte in that show?
No.
Is that Harry?
In some other like ghost-chasing show. Anyway.
I could look it up on the internet, but I don't care about that.
Who cares about the internet?
Oh, fine. Poor daughter of Harry Belafonte. Where do you go, Jerry?
Harry, Sherry. This is my daughter. This is my son, Carrie. Tickling my fancy this week is the podcast Harmontown. Specifically, the episode titled... I guess I can't say the title of it, but it sounds like NeuroKitties.
Whoa, yeah, you cannot say that.
There's an interview with the author, whose name also escapes me. My God.
Wow.
Don't worry. There are corrections coming.
Anyway, it's the author of this new book called Neurotribes, and it's like a history of autism and stuff. And I'd never listened to Harmontown before, but I randomly sort of scrolled through my Netflix queue, like blindly holding the scroll button, and then I let go, and then Harmontown came up, and I was like, I'm going to watch it. And it was funny. I like self-destructive guys who hate themselves. And I never really watched Community much.
Community's great.
I watched it enough to know that I do enjoy it.
Well, and, the first three seasons.
And I like Dan Herman as a person, personality, so I've started listening to the podcast, and it's pretty great. There's a lot of noise and crosstalk, much like another show that I listen to.
There's a lot of D&D discussion.
They play Shadowrun, and yeah, that's right.
It's got interesting. Ryan just geeked out a minute.
They're working on a show, I guess, called HarmonQuest. That's like just the thing. So they have a game master who's the
There's a guy whose entire job is being the game master.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I think the address is harmontown.fm, but I could be wrong. It's a Feral Audio podcast.
I feel pretty good about my research skills. I'm like,
yeah.
I just came in knowing
according
the show
to Wikipedia, I didn't do any research.
Yeah.
So I will give Brian the link to the show in the notes. So check out Harmontown. It's a good show.
So the author of Neurotribes, The Legacy of Autism and the Future of Neurodiversity was Steve Silberman.
Steve Silberman.
The Friday the 13th TV show, I think, was actually called Friday's Curse, maybe?
It was called Friday the 13th, the series.
Friday the 13th, the series.
I'm well aware of this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, also Freddy's Nightmares, another show.
Friday the 13th.
That one actually had Freddy in it.
Yeah.
Friday the 13th.
There was a good episode where David Cronenberg directed it. That was
what?
Yeah, he directed it.
Freddy's Nightmares or Friday the 13th?
No, Friday the 13th, because it was Canadian.
Yeah, yeah. It was a very,
I tried to stay up late when I was a kid to watch Freddy's Nightmares.
It was hard staying up for that show. Now it's it's 10:30.
I didn't understand what caffeine was, but I would go and get...
You remedied that.
I would get sugar, like, and like, drink a cup of sugar. And then I would just crash the hell out. So.
You're the best parents ever.
Yep. So. My mom was like at a sex toy party across the hall, smoking cigarettes.
Wow.
That's a good anecdote. So the show that IMDb lists as Friday's Curse is Friday the 13th, the series. And no one named Belafonte was in it.
Ah, boo.
But Roby.
Bill was right. Why did we challenge Bill's knowledge?
We don't challenge
Bill's knowledge.
I know better.
Roby.
That's what I get.
More like disroby.
I think you need to make that joke two more times.
Do you do the same jokes all the time?
I did it on purpose. That's the title of my forthcoming memoir. You know, I did it on purpose.
Didgeridoo was hysterical the first time. The fifth time you did it, I was like,
you kept repeating the didgeridoo.
Anyway.
He just does it to panty for Gary.
Wow. Poor Gary from Perth, you know.
I'm going to take you out back.
That brings up an interesting point.
Even for us, the show went totally off the rails at this point. We ran out of time. Bill and Jeremy had to leave. The rest of us continued on.
Mike, what's tickling your fancy? Not we're alone.
No, that we're alone.
Yeah. Ooh, after dark, yeah. Sexy times. I mentioned... In the previous segment that William Golding was a teacher who tired of the portrayal of children as perfect innocents. So today I thought I would recommend another book by a former teacher who felt the same way. Yeah, that I just read is for the girls. The book is called The Fifth Business by Robertson Davies.
I didn't know he was a teacher.
Yeah. Davies was apparently a big deal in his native Canada. I guess this continues also last week's recommendation of Kate Beaton. It's Canada Month, gang!
A.
Canada Timber. Next week, I'll recommend You Can't Do That on Television.
I love that show.
Oh, so good. Fifth?
Skinny Puppy is my favorite band.
Yeah, Viet Cong is pretty good. The Fifth Business, or Fifth Business, is the first book in the Deptford trilogy, which begins with two boys throwing snowballs one day in 1908 outside of Deptford, Ontario. One kid throws a snowball with a very hefty rock in it, misses his friend, and hits a young pregnant woman who not only is knocked unconscious and suffers brain damage, but also gives birth prematurely. This act will resonate throughout both of the children's lives. The book is written really well and is quite a page-turner, despite, you know, not having zombies or robots or, you know, interesting stuff in it. But it's actually really good. Who knew? You know, a book about actual people who did actual things, you know? You know, I mean, the main character becomes a school teacher. He gets maimed in the Great War. Spends most of his time, like, researching the lives of saints. There's this really cool bit, like, near the end where, he criticizes his friend for not being very self-reflective when he himself is not very self-reflective. I was riveted from beginning to end. And I'm eager to read the other two books in the trilogy. Good stuff. Apparently, like, this Davies guy was, like, big friends with John Irving, and one of the reviews on Goodreads says that, like, apparently John Irving owes him money because, like, you know, he's very John Irving-esque, but I never read anything by John Irving because why?
You never read anything by John Irving?
He was a literary award winner.
Yeah.
You read, like, one of his books during that fall season.
Zombies, Robots.
That wouldn't have had anything. I've never read Robertson Davies, and I always wanted to because do you remember about the band Moxie Fruvis?
Yeah,
they have that song that with all these like Canadian writers, like all these
oh cool
like, the literary song, and he's in it.
Well, you should see my story reading, baby. You should hear the things that she says. She says, "Hun, drop dead. I'd rather go to bed with Gabriel than see a Marquez. Got a love with William S. Burroughs. Leave on the light for bell hooks. I've been flirting with P.A. Burton because he's so smart in his books. I like to go out dancing. My baby loves a bunch of authors. My heart's a broken bleeding. Baby's just sitting there doing some reading."
And that was what I learned about Robert. And I wanted to go through and like read a book by all the writers. Yeah. And I think right now I'm only read by Doris Lessing. That's the only one I've
read. I love the King of Spain song.
Eduardo Galeano's The Children of Days was translated by Mark Fried. Galeano passed away in April of this year. The Children of the Days was his last book translated into English. I wanted to talk about that, but Jeremy was talking about Saturday morning
Jesus
cartoons.
While we're dumping on me...
Other corrections?
I would like to dump on myself for a minute, which would be a feat of physics.
Engineering.
Engineering, thank you, that's what I should have said.
There's websites where you can learn how to do
that. Yeah, that's true. Because I'm known for my anecdotes, this is relevant... In reference to me not liking Beetlejuice, I said something like, that's the title of my forthcoming memoir. I've used that joke like a number of times on this podcast, so I apologize.
You have?
I realized that I have, so I don't know if it was funny. It may not have been funny the first time, which is why I keep trying.
Maybe we've grown into it. We've evolved with you.
So I'm just trying to make it funny, so it will be funny.
By the time you publish, it will be very funny.
It's funnier every time. Yeah. I was paralyzed with laughter.
Oh, yes.
Well, you can write multiple memoirs. People do that.
Paralyzed with Laughter. That's the title of my forthcoming memoir.
Nyak.
Other corrections?
I don't think so.
That's cool.
We're perfect.
So, random addendum. The Livebox show in North Korea was coordinated by Morten Travik, and he's a Norwegian theater director and videographer. He directed one of their videos, and he also, in the past, had set up cultural exchanges with North Korea, between artists in Norway. So he kind of got the ball rolling on that. And yes, the state in North Korea has to invite you to come, and they thought it was okay. But
they have to let you leave when you're done. But
it was noted that no state officials were high-ranking, self-identified state officials were at the Livebox show. Huh. And also,
sad face.
Some people also thought the band was a little disingenuous, not only for all the ideological stuff, but there were other artists have been invited to North Korea to perform. So, for instance, all the artists from Norway that Travik had previously invited. And then also, at least once for sure, I mean, I learned that Roger Clinton was invited there when...
Oh, whoa. That brings the Livebox show coolness down a bit. We bring such luminaries as Roger Clinton, you know.
Did he have a blues band available? Or something like that? Was that what his deal? I mean, I know...
Oh, yeah, he was supposed to have some sort of band.
Did he play sax too, or was that just Bill?
That was just Bill, but I remember...
Maybe we should say
Roger Clinton's greatest feat was being the mayor in Pumpkinhead.
Well, I think that maybe like presidential siblings should...
Oh, Pumpkinhead too.
Correction!
Presidential siblings should start a band. So like
what Billy, could we call presidential siblings?
Billy Carter, Roger Clinton, and then...
Bush family tree.
Oh, yeah. Neil Bush. Yeah. Neil Bush will have to get out of jail first. He's probably already out of jail.
That's where he's learning how to be a musician. Have you seen Empire?
Yeah. Roger Clinton will also have to go.
Yeah, that's true. Right. That's true.
Right. But for more information about presidential siblings, you can go to www.library.nashville.org. And our theme music is by
Ryan Dillon.
Next week.
What is next?
Oktoberfest.
With his own book in Germany, but it shall never happen here. While I was at it, I found a whole bundle of German books. I just had them to keep the fire warm.
John, boy, stay out of it.
You stop that right now.
Hold on, young fuck.
I didn't want to go this far.
I didn't mean to go this far, John, boy. Calm down.
Get your hand off me. This is my fault. I started this whole thing with my newspaper, I know that. But you misunderstood me. I was trying to show you what people are capable of out of ignorance and out of fear and out of hatred. Do you realize that this kind of thing is happening all over Germany? All over Germany! And right now, Germany and Walton's Mountain are not very far apart in my mind. I read that a foreign tyrant was publishing his plans to take over the world and was carrying out those plans. I thought you ought to have the opportunity to know about it. Just like I'd take the opportunity to tell you if there was a blight that was threatening your crops or some kind of scandal that was threatening your government. I mean, that's freedom as far as I can see it. And if you choose not to know about it, that's freedom too. But if you take a book and if you burn this book, then you can't know about it. And you had your